This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello, it's David Cameron Walker here. You've probably been wondering where we've been for the last month or so, and I can only apologise. Me and Mark have been all over the country. He's been moving up to Manchester and getting himself sorted out there, moving houses. I've been down here starting a new job. It's been Christmas, it's been New Year. January hasn't been very dry at all. So all of those factors combined have meant that we simply have taken our eye off the ball and haven't been able to do a pod for way too long now. So we apologise for that, although I'm sure hardly any of you have lost any sleep over it, to be honest. But I'm here today with a mini episode just to keep you ticking over until we finally get our acts together in the next week or so and do a proper episode where we'll go back over the last couple of months and look at all the things we've missed and all the things that are coming up as well, and hopefully it'll be back to normal soon. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, I thought it would be a good time to look at the increasingly fraught situation at Charlton Athletic. We've seen protests over the last few weeks. We've seen the fans getting increasingly angry and disappointed, frustrated about the state of their club. Owner Roland de Châtelet is coming under increasing pressure. The fans clearly want him out, but he doesn't seem like he's going anywhere at the moment. Just today, as I record this, he has appointed Jose Riga as manager on an 18-month contract, back at the Valley for his second spell in charge after he was there previously in 2014, keeping them up that season before leaving in the summer under a bit of a cloud, as so many people have done from Charlton in the previous, year and a half since that time. So it doesn't seem to be getting any better. I'm not sure whether Charlton fans think that Jose Riga is the answer to their problems. I expect not. We had a terrible 5-0 defeat up at Huddersfield a few days ago. Johnny Jackson and the players have apologised and have since said they'll reimburse the travelling fans that went to that game. We've seen thousands and thousands of fans outside the Valley at recent home games, protesting, screaming abuse, chanting songs at the owners saying that they want change. The raw facts of the situation are that the club are 23rd, second from bottom in the Championship, without a win in 10 games, out of the FA Cup at the hands of League One Colchester the other week, and they are in desperate situation. They're staring relegation in the face, not for the first time in the last few years. So today we're going to speak to a man who's very much at the centre of all the protests and all the efforts to try and force change and bring back the good times to Charlton. His name is Rick Everett, and he is the editor of the Voice of the Valley fanzine, and he's going to join me in a second. But first, let's hear some of those protests from the recent home game on January the 2nd. This was the 1-1 draw against Nottingham Forest. This was when the fans congregated outside the Valley after the game, and as you can hear, they weren't happy. So there you go. Very sad to hear that, really. As inspiring as it is that fans of a football club can get together to try and bring about change, positive change to their club, it's sad that we even got to this situation in the first place. So as I said, Rick Everett joins me now, the editor of the Voice of the Valley fanzine. And I simply start by asking you, what on earth is going on at your club?
I think that's what we'd like to know, really. In some ways, we do know, because Roland de Châtelet is doing his usual thing, appointing his mates from his network who he's worked with before, and generally creating a situation that Charlton was not tenable.
Rick, you've been one of the key voices, the key leaders in the protest that we've seen so far. How confident are you that you and your fellow fans can actually force change here?
I think the first thing to say is that the great majority of Charlton supporters are now united by the movement to get rid of Roland de Châtelet. So that gives us a power of itself, just simply in having the numbers. And the other thing is that I don't think his model is sustainable. I don't think what he's trying to do can possibly succeed. So in the end, the combination of those two factors will get rid of him, will persuade him that he's got to sell the club, I think, because otherwise I think he'd end up just pouring money into a hole. I don't think he's got anywhere to go.
What is he trying to do? That's the key question though, really, isn't it? Because we hear so little from Roland. I suppose, you know, we can see what's happening in terms of all the managers and the players that have come into the club. But what is his aim? What's he trying to do?
I think what he's trying to do is make the club sustainable by producing young players and selling them on. But the bit that he's missing is that the purpose of a football club is to win matches and climb up the league ladder. I don't think he's overly concerned with that. He thinks that he can cover the losses that are involved in running a club at Championship, or as it may end up being at League One level, by selling young talent. But what he'll find is, in practice, you can't identify and develop the talent fast enough to fill the gap. And he'll have no fans watching, because people don't want to go to football matches as part of the match day experience, as they're always talking about it. They want to support their team and see their team succeed. They want to build relationships with players over time and with managers over time, to feel that they have a sense of belonging with the club. And that's all disappearing at Charlton. So if he's not careful, he's going to end up with very few spectators.
And it doesn't have to be this way, though. That's the thing. I'm a Watford fan, and it wasn't too long ago that we had a takeover from the Pozzo family, and we've done very well since. But at the time when they came in, there were a few raised eyebrows. They were bringing in new managers. They sacked Sean Dyche, who was a very popular figure, who'd done a very good job, not too dissimilar to when Chris Powell initially left Charlton, after he'd done very good for you. And we were a bit worried. We were a bit concerned. We were thinking, what are they going to do? Are they going to strip out the heart of the club? Is it going to be a money-making exercise? Are they going to flood the club with players from their network from abroad? And it wasn't always easy, and it was a bit choppy waters initially. But the crucial thing is, A, they made largely right decisions with the employment of managers and the recruitment of good players. And more importantly, they were true to the club's values and traditions. They made a very big effort from the start to understand what the club was about. There was always communications with the supporters, and I think that trust developed fairly quickly, and it's gone from strength to strength since. But I just can't see any parallel with Charlton. It seems as though there's just no communication, and there's a real misunderstanding from Roland and the owners and the chief exec and everyone there as to what Charlton is about.
I think it's very much that they want to impose on Charlton what they want a football club to be. And they're doing that really regardless of the culture of football in this country, and certainly the culture of Charlton, which has always been a club, or certainly in the last 25 years, has been a club where the fans have played a big part in shaping how the club operated. And the club's reaped the benefit for that in terms of growing attendances, very high percentage of season ticket holders, and a lot of ideas and voluntary services put forward through supporters. They made clear from the outset they didn't want any of that. They alienated the fans by getting rid of Jan Kermigan and Chris Powell very early on. They've never really recovered from that. And I have to say that I don't think the people that Roland du Châtelet has put on the ground on the administrative side, particularly the chief executive, are up to the job, really. And that's another big part of the problem.
Why isn't Roland more open to communicating with the fans, do you think?
I suspect that he just has his way of doing things, and he's absolutely convinced that he's right. And he doesn't really see the fans as being part of the equation. I mean, I think he sees it as a sort of business-to-business enterprise, in which he's in the business of producing young talent and selling it on to other companies in the football business. And the spectators, to him, are a bit of a side issue. I don't think he thinks we've got anything to contribute. If he understood the history of Charlton, then he would know that we are the club that formed a political party created a situation in which the directors could take the club back to the Valley by overturning the council's decision. There's a rich history there, and there were a lot of people when they arrived who would have very happily worked with them, given their time freely, given their expertise freely, knowing that Roland had the resources to make the club successful. But he doesn't seem interested in any of that. And you have to assume, I mean, because he says so little, you don't really know how much he understands of what's going on a day-to-day basis. But you have to assume that he knows what's going on down there. And if that's the case, then he really doesn't seem to care.
And the chief executive, forgive me if I pronounce her name wrong, is it Karin Mitra?
Katrin Mera,
yeah. So, I mean, she is the person who is the kind of face of the operation, I suppose, on the ground level, and she's coming for a lot of stick, and I suppose rightly so in some quarters. But I mean, is there almost a sense that maybe you feel sorry for her, in terms of she has to, maybe she's not getting a lot of communication from above either, and she's kind of got to stand there and try and communicate these decisions, even if she might not necessarily be making them herself?
I think she's someone who is struggling with the job, understandably, given the lack of experience that she brought to it. And she's not availed herself of any of the offers of help that have been made to her by people who maybe work there and and know some of the problems of running a football club and running Charlton in particular. So I don't have very much sympathy for her. And when she makes her appearances in Belgium, on Belgian websites or at conferences in Dublin, or even in front of supporters' meetings and says absolutely crazy things, you know, all the managers that we've had, they've all been the right decision to appoint, despite the fact she previously said that you needed somebody there for the long term who could make strategic decisions. You know, she says that it's weird that the supporters feel a sense of ownership over the club. You know, she's made all kinds of crazy comments in the media away from Charlton, and she spends a lot of time talking about Charlton fans to media elsewhere, but not actually having that conversation with Charlton fans as a whole. So, no, I don't really have very much sympathy for her, and I think she should go back to Belgium and perhaps do a job to which she's more suited.
I mean, it's staggering, really, when you hear those sort of comments, that somebody can be put in charge of a football club with such a profound misunderstanding of what a football club in this country, what a football club like Charlton with its history is all about, really. I mean, it's amazing. You know, you're lost for words, really. But in terms of the protests so far, I mean, do you feel that they've made any difference? They've obviously picked up a lot of steam in the media, but in terms of what of achieving what you want them to achieve, do you think they've helped?
I think they've put the club under a lot of pressure, you know, we don't know exactly why they withdrew from the offer that they made to the Serbian manager yesterday. The suggestion that from the inside is that there was a bit of an internal revolt there, and Roland backed off. But within 24 hours of the idea he was going to appoint a British manager emerging, we find he's gone back to his network model again. So it may have been a factor in the fact that they didn't appoint the guy from Hungary, the Serbian from Hungary, but whose name I can't pronounce, by the way, so I'm not going to attempt it. Certainly, we've now got Jose Riga as a more popular choice, I think, with Charlton supporters, but whether he's going to be equipped and able to do anything about that, I don't know. I think we will make an impact, and I think we are making an impact at the margins. But I think, in the end, if you've got so many people opposed to what you're doing because it's so crazy, it will become impossible for them to run the club.
So they have appointed Jose Riga, an 18-month contract, and it feels to me that, well, he's kind of the best of a bad bunch, or maybe not even that. And you're kind of back at square one again. You know, he's back, and he was the guy that was initially appointed when you got rid of Chris Powell to come in and save you. And he did save you. That's in his credit. But I don't sense that this is the answer to your problems.
No, I mean, he's the most credible of the people that Duchatelet has appointed to run the team. And yes, he was there for 16 games, and the team did stay up reasonably comfortably in the end, I suppose. But that doesn't mean to say it's going to translate into him being able to do the same this time, because when he came in before, he had Chris Powell's coaches around him. He had Alex Dyer and Damian Matthew and Ben Roberts. And he had a different squad which had been put together by Chris Powell, and that spirit was there. I don't sense that in the current squad. I don't have any quarrel with the players, even if some of them are not good enough. That's not their fault that they're there or they've been put in this position. But I don't see within that squad now the spirit and the character which enabled Riga, or was part of Charlton staying up 2 years ago. So I very much hope that he's a miracle worker and he keeps Charlton in the Championship, because I think it will be a real disaster if we get relegated. And like most of the fans, you know, I will give him a fair chance, but I'd be surprised if he's the answer. And to be honest with you, he's got an 18-month contract this time. I'm sure he insisted upon that after his experience last time when Duchatelet wouldn't keep him on. But I'd be astonished if he's still there in 18 months' time, because that's not what Duchatelet does. You've only got to look at his record across all the clubs that he owns in Europe. He turns managers over at a quite alarming rate. So I wish Jose luck, but I don't think he'll be there for 18 months.
What would relegation mean, do you think, for this situation, and how would that affect the owner's thinking?
Well, I think it would be catastrophic, because the fans have no confidence and are completely alienated from the owners. Worse than that, I think they feel that it's no longer their club. They don't have that feeling for it that they've had in the past, and they're drifting away in massive numbers already, even within the existing season ticket holders. He's going to lose a huge amount of money if the team gets relegated, just from losing the central income, the TV money and the solidarity payment, which is much lower in League One. He'll also lose a substantial chunk of the season ticket revenue, which, would, to be fair, will have less impact on him. I suspect you're looking at £5 to £7 million worse off in League One. And even on his model, he's then got to recover that by producing more young talent and selling it, which he's going to find very difficult to do. Some of his costs will go down, but they won't be anywhere near enough to offset the amount of revenue he's going to lose.
So let's just say that in an ideal world, you and the fellow members of Charlton fans who are protesting are successful, and Rowland decides that, OK, I've failed, I'm going to give you your club back, I'm going to go off and do something else. What would happen next? Who comes in? Who do you want to take this club forward if it's not going to be Roland de Châtelet?
Well, Roland's had an offer which he's refused to engage with from an investor put forward by Peter Varney, the former chief executive. My understanding of that is a very substantial individual or individuals and would be equipped to take the club back to the Premier League and would certainly acquire it with that intention. Now, as time goes on, it may be that that offer is no longer available to Charlton. But what I have had very clearly from within the club is that they've been multiple approaches. And one of their reasons they say they don't need to engage with Peter Varney or have chosen not to is because they get so many such approaches. So there's an element of risk for us because, as with any new owner coming in, we don't know what plans they might have and how credible they might have. But Roland de Châtelet is setting the bar so low that it's almost impossible to believe that somebody who came in could be worse than him. The only thing you can say about him is he's got a lot of money, but he's not spending it on improving the football at Charlton or in pushing Charlton towards getting back into the Premier League, which we all know is the only sustainable place for the club because it can't break even in the Championship. And it won't break even on his model any more than it will on any other.
Would you possibly look to try and have some sort of fan representation on the board in the future to, you know, to guard against this sort of situation happening?
Well, the irony is, of course, that we were one of the first clubs to have an elected fan on the board. From 1992 onwards, we had an elected director. I think it's unrealistic to expect a supporters trust model to operate in the top two divisions and certainly in the Premier League, but we'd certainly like to see more influence in the boardroom. And I think it's, in the past, all the directors were Charlton supporters, so in a way that negated the elected supporters, so the need for it. I do think we need to be able to provide our advice because we can do things which make the club more successful. You know, if everyone feels that the club is pulling together and working in the same direction, as certainly it did for 10 or 15 years from going back to the Valley in 1992, then that can be a really good thing for the owner. It can really add value to his business. I mean, everybody who works with people in the voluntary sector knows that they add huge value to organisations. And football clubs, because of the passion that supporters have, are really valuable assets to clubs. I'm afraid that Roland doesn't understand that, but there will come a time, hopefully, when a future owner does.
You kind of sit here and you think, oh, is there anything the Football League could maybe do? And, you know, we're all looking at Charlton, you know, neutral fans are looking at Charlton and thinking this is a once, you know, a great club with a great tradition and history, and we feel sorry for them. It's not good to see them in the situation like they are. We don't want to see fans protesting outside of grounds about their owners and stuff. But essentially, if somebody is deemed to be fit and proper and they buy a football club, to a certain extent, they can kind of do what they want with it, I suppose. So I feel the urge to maybe ask the Football League and question them to see if they can do anything. But really, at the same time, it's kind of where do you draw the line?
Yeah, I don't think that Roland de Châtelet has done anything dishonest or in breach of the rules. But I do think he's acting against the spirit of the game because I don't think he's primarily concerned with winning football matches. That must be a problem for the Football League. But I think there's a bigger issue because if he continues to provoke supporters, no matter how much people like myself might urge people to stay on the right side of the law and to protest in a sensible way, he is going to aggravate people beyond that point, and it's going to come get to the stage where matches could be disrupted or they're going to be, you know, there are going to be some serious scenes outside the ground. Now, I'm not encouraging that. I'm just saying it's a fact of life because he is provoking people so far that sooner or later there will be a response which is, you know, something that we don't want to see.
We've seen other clubs recently, Blackpool come to mind at the end of last season. The fans went on the pitch and basically got the match abandoned with 10 minutes or so to go. I mean, would you be prepared to go that far? I mean, what sort of things do you think you can do other than sort of organised sort of protests like we saw a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I think I'm not advocating that. I'm not advocating anybody breaks the law. We've got some quite sophisticated ideas about how we might get to Roland du Châtelet and Catriona Mara over the coming weeks and months, and we're keeping those up our sleeve for the time being. But I do, I can't get away from the fact that if people are provoked and provoked and provoked, and the way that the club is being run and the sheer incompetence of the way it's being run, then sooner or later some people are going to take the law into their own hands. And at that point, obviously the authorities, and not just the football authorities, will have to take some kind of a view.
And just to be clear, you've obviously made, you and your fellow supporters groups have obviously made every effort to extend the opportunity to speak to Roland du Châtelet and the club, you know, face to face and all that sort of stuff.
It's been made clear from the outset that Roland du Châtelet will never speak to fans. And the other two directors, Catriona Mara and Richard Murray, the chairman, are adamant about that. Under no circumstances will he ever speak to fans. He hasn't been to a Charlton match since, I think, October the 21st, 2014. He apparently watches matches by live relay in Belgium. Whether I believe that or not is another matter, but I accept that facility is probably available to him. But he doesn't come to matches, which obviously is a big place where he would interact and get some understanding of what's going on within the club. People have tried to engage with Catriona Mara. It's not been a very satisfactory process. And to be honest, I don't think Richard Murray has any authority or influence. So it's very difficult to see how you can get anywhere with a man who just doesn't participate, which is the position with Roland.
Just looking at the playing staff briefly, obviously not going very well at all. 23rd in the table, second from bottom, 3 points from safety, a run of 10 games without a win in all competitions, and obviously the most recent game being that 5-0 defeat at Huddersfield, which since Johnny Jackson and the players have apologised for and offered to reimburse the travelling fans who went up to see that. Obviously, it's not going well on the pitch, but is there any hope that somebody like Johnny Jackson could galvanise the players that are there and rally the players along with Jose Riga, and you might just stay up this season?
Well, I would question whether the quality and the strength in depth exists in the squad. I think some of the players who came in last summer are talented footballers, but what we've tended to see is they're not equipped to play in a 46-game English Championship season. They can't cope with the number of matches and the sheer physicality of it, hence they get lots of injuries. There are some good players at Charlton. I don't think the fans have any quarrel with the players. I think we know that, by and large, they've been doing their best, but they get demoralised and unsettled by the things that are going on around the club like everybody else. I don't think that the quality is there in depth in the squad. But I'd love to be proven wrong. And Johnny Jackson is a good example. There are one or two people there who are leaders. And I'd love to think that they can get a reaction from the rest of the players and steer the team to safety. But I'm not confident about it.
And one particular green shoot of hope amongst all this darkness is Ademola Lookman, who has made a very promising start to his career, already attracting interest from bigger clubs. The Sharks are starting to circle. But do you think you'd be able to, hold on to him and, you know, B, how good can he be?
I think he's an absolutely fantastic talent. And, speaking to people within the club who are better equipped to make these judgments than me, I mean, they're incredibly excited about him. But he's also very young. And one of the problems we've had is that du Châtelet thinks he can play a lot of teenagers and expose them to a lot of games. So you've got somebody else like Carl Ahern Grant, who's been in the team now for nearly 2 years. And they're just not old enough and just not ready to play the number of games they're being asked to play. And they're not surrounded by enough experience to bring them on properly. Now, I hope Lookman's going to be with us certainly for the second half of this season or for the rest of this season. And he can make a good contribution. But it's completely unreasonable to expect somebody as young as he is, I think he's 18, to come into the team and play every week in that division. The risks to some of those players, and I'm not saying Lookman is one of them, if you do force them to do that, you could set them back a long way, as we've seen with players in the past.
Rick, thanks very much for talking to us. We'll leave it there. We'll let you get back to planning whatever it is next you've got up your sleeve in terms of the protests and all that. We sympathise with you a great deal. It's a desperate situation, and it's sad to see any football club in the situation that it is, but good luck, I suppose, for the rest of the season and beyond.
Thanks very much. say that.
You're listening to We Are Going Up.
That was Rick Everett, the editor of the Voice of the Valley fanzine. Much work to be done there at Charlton, both on and off the pitch, from the players, the boardroom, and indeed the fans. And we wish them well over the next few months. Hopefully they can stay up, and hopefully we can get Roland de Châtelet to see sense, whether that be staying and talking to the fans or indeed leaving. We'll have to watch this one carefully over the next few months, and we'll see how it goes. So that's all I've got time for today. I know it's been quite brief, but hopefully you've been glad to hear it. Hopefully you've learnt a bit about the situation at Charlton. And we will be back soon, I promise you. I'm actually going up to Manchester tomorrow night, Friday night, as I record this, to see Mark. And we're going to sort ourselves out. We're going to decide. I mean, I am actually going up to celebrate two of our friends' birthdays, and we're going bowling at nearly midnight in Manchester. That's another story. But by the by, we're going to sort ourselves out. And we're going to decide when we're going to do the next pod. We're going to get ourselves back on track, and we'll be with you soon. As you know, it has been difficult for us to do as many shows as we'd like to this season. It's been harder for us to do the shows because we're not in the same place, and we don't always have the same access to studios that we used to. We do apologise once again if any of you fans out there, the long-serving listeners that you are, have been disappointed at the less frequent episodes that we've been giving you this season. But hopefully you've enjoyed the ones we have done. Hopefully you've enjoyed today, and we will hopefully speak to you soon.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.